Hello and welcome back to It's Not That Important. I'm Mary.
And I'm Laura.
I feel like we usually say we're your hosts, but I kind of forgot that. But we are
your hosts.
We are your hosts. I just want to apologize in advance for my voice. I am going on 3 weeks of sickness, which is, it's just really fun, and I've been enjoying every minute of it. And hacking up a lung, or I'm gonna stop because it could
get disgusting. I'll just summarize.
Thank you. Today is an interesting episode, I will say. Mm-hmm. Very interesting episode, because it's not a movie that was on the list.
No, it was not spin for this.
This was not a spinning one, but it came through creative epiphany, maybe.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay. We were just inspired and thought this would be an interesting conversation to have.
You know, I think it's actually interesting because as we talk to different friends about different movies,
yeah,
this has come up multiple times. We're like,
yeah,
we have to watch this and do an episode right now.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I like that we're breaking from our formal.
I do too, because it's kind of, it's bringing out different creativity, different conversations, and yeah, so we might be having a Christmas episode soon.
I'm so excited. This was so good, though.
This one?
So good.
We haven't even said what we watched. I mean, it's so in the title, but... so we watched The Secret Garden, the 1987 version.
1987.
And this is the one that you've...
This is what I grew up on.
You grew up with.
Yes.
Okay, so I just read the book and was curious about... the differences and the similarities that we would find when we watched the movie.
And I don't remember. I feel like I read the book as a kid, or it was read to me.
Yeah.
But this movie is how I remember the story.
Okay.
So I'm excited to even hear so much more from your fresh perspective of having just read it.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, you just read it and you were talking about it as you read it. But all I had was that memory, but now watching it again, it's so much more, it's fresher, more fresh.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah.
This 1987 version, we started the
1993.
Yeah, the 1993, and we're like, this isn't it.
As soon as I saw Mary Lennox, I was like, wrong movie.
You're nope. Like, no, she has brown hair. And so you found it on YouTube.
I did.
And we pulled it up on YouTube. The only actor I knew from this movie, and when I looked on like IMDb, was Colin Firth, who plays grown up Colin. I was gonna say Colin Farrell. Nope,
no,
not Colin Farrell, not Colin Firth, Colin Craven.
There we go.
That's the only one I knew.
Yeah.
Did you know anyone else?
I didn't know anyone else.
Okay,
but and he's only in it for like what, 30 seconds
at the end. Yeah,
but I was like. It's Colin Firth.
It's
Mr. Darcy in the flesh.
So this was, it was good. Mm-hmm. I'll preface it with that. It was good. As they came up to the castle, and I was like, that looks like the Downton Abbey castle. And so I was like, I wonder if there's a way to find this out. And there is confirmed. The castle in the 1987 version of The Secret Garden is the castle used in Downton Abbey.
Which is just cool.
Very cool. I thought it was
beautiful.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous in both, like, back in the 80s when this was made, and also in the 2000s.
I just would never want to live there.
No.
I always think, whenever I look at a house that size, I think I would hate to clean the baseboards.
If you lived there, I don't think you would need to.
That's probably true. But, like, those are... That's how I pick my real estate.
You're like,
can I handle the baseboards?
That's so real.
Yeah.
So real. So my first exposure, I'm pretty sure I watched this version.
Okay.
And my first exposure to this movie was at my cousin's grandparents' house. So not my grandparents, but mm-hmm. they're, you know, on the other side. And every summer we'd go up to Oregon and spend time there, and their grandparents had a farm, and the farm was so fun to go, and they had this old farmhouse, and upstairs they had a playroom, and we would go there all the time. It was fun, never scary. The rest of the upstairs was terrifying.
Interesting.
Very terrifying. I hated it. And I wasn't there often, so I wasn't too familiar with mm-hmm. the whole house. But we watched The Secret Garden in the upstairs. And all I remember is Colin Craven moaning and groaning. And I was like, this is so scary.
Because you're in a scary place.
I'm in a scary place. He's down the hall. It's broad daylight. It is not, it's not scary at all. Broad daylight. All the lights are on. Like,
it's amazing.
Nothing should be scary. And my like little imaginative brain was like, this is a ghost and he's down the hall.
The crying of the child in this film is terrifying.
It's so scary. Watching it now, I was like, okay, like I get it. It sounds like our ice machine.
It really does.
It really does. Which I think is a problem. But sick. Sorry, that's got to sick. Be terrible. Can figure it out. Anyway, that was my first exposure. And so like, I was kind of put off to The Secret Garden because of that. And I don't even know if I finished the movie.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, I'm bored. This is scary. I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm going to go. Bye. But so reading it was really interesting. Okay. And so I'm curious your exposure. You watched this one as a kid. Tell us about it.
I remember watching this repeatedly as a kid.
Really?
Yes. I loved it. And it was just like, I thought Mary was an absolute brat.
Yeah.
Right? Accurate. But I loved that they played outside. Mm. And I think we watched it because I remember watching this with like my sister and our girl cousins.
Okay.
And it, to me, this is a beach place memory. Like we have like a beach cabin. And so you watch the movie and then we would go outside and play. Mm. And so it was like this reflection, I think, of the friendships I had with my cousins.
Yeah.
And so I thought the kid was absolutely terrifying. The crying was terrifying. Yeah. But to me, I just loved the way they played in the garden together. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me, like, we would go do the same thing.
Yeah.
And so
it was like an extension.
Yeah.
Like, of what you were actually, like, you would watch what you would actually go do.
Exactly.
That's now, fun.
I picked up, I'm watching it today. And yeah. Like,
four pages of notes, you guys.
I'm in love with this story.
Yeah.
I had no clue. I was a child. I missed all of it.
Yeah.
It was just a story of fun and friendship to me.
Yeah. It is.
I am
so deep.
I haven't even finished processing all my thoughts.
Yeah. Which is why I think this is going to be an interesting conversation. I wrote a paper after I read The Secret Garden, mm-hmm. and it talked a lot about healing and gender and transformation, like in general.
Okay.
And so I was kind of watching it through that lens because
the
garden brings a lot of healing to everybody in this situation, even though it kind of ended up being locked up and made to be a secret garden because of like death, essentially. The regrowth of the garden, like, blossomed all these people into new people. And it's just,
oh, I have so many notes on this.
I know, it's amazing.
I'm so tracking with you.
It's amazing. Yes.
I am 100% with you on the healing element.
Yeah.
I mean, from the very beginning of the movie, I remember like watching this as a kid and being like, what is her problem? Why is she so mean?
Yeah.
And by nature, I mean, I can be strong and stubborn too, but I would never have the courage to behave the way she did. Just unfiltered.
Absolutely.
Completely about herself and just outspoken and no regard for authority, right? But I just was like struck how it opens with such brokenness in the little girl.
Mm.
And I saw her act, like her behavior, through such a different lens. Like, this is a child that's been abandoned.
Yeah.
She is like waking up and is surrounded by death,
mm-hmm.
is stripped from her home, from her culture, from all her comforts. Like, she's been, has no parents any longer. Like, you think of, she lost familiar food, familiar sounds, familiar weather. And then they like burned her doll, you know, her like prized toy.
The one thing she was choosing to bring with her.
Yes. Yeah. And I just went, oh my word, everything else. It just set the scene for me.
Yeah.
And I just had such compassion on her from that point.
Interesting.
And to be brought to this new country. And one of the first things, I mean, she's called so many things.
Yeah.
But they talk about how Mr. Craven doesn't want to see her. And he's leaving for London in the morning. So she's been taken. She's lost everything and thrown into this place where she knows nothing and no one. And the person who's supposed to welcome her home, or not home, but welcome her.
Yeah.
Wants nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
And I just went, oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And so it just, it started the movie for me from such a different perspective.
Yeah.
And so my heart towards Mary through this story was very different.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. Yeah. I liked towards the end of the movie, one of the people in the house was talking about how Mary's so spoiled and that's why she acts that way. And the other person said that, like, I think it's actually the opposite. I think she's hurt and neglected. Mm-hmm. And that's why she's acting that way.
Martha's mom speaks about her. And she says, like, she's talking to the house. What is the woman's name who, like, runs the home?
Mrs. Medlock.
Yes, thank you. She's talking to her, and she's like, because this woman's at her wit's end with her. She's like, Mary is so difficult. And she's, the mom says, a firm hand is needed, but sometimes you have to find out what's behind it. And she went on to say that, with Dickon, a wounded animal will first strike out towards him. And then when you gain trust, you'll see that. And I have a quote from Dickon that I wrote down as well, because they're someone else is complaining about how difficult Mary is.
Yeah.
And he says, yes, there's a stubbornness in her, but there's also a need.
Ooh, that makes me almost want to cry.
Right, like, just the way Dickon saw wounded things.
Yeah.
Established trust.
Yeah.
And allows them to heal. I was just, I mean, his mom saw the gift in him, and we see the transformation in Mary.
Yeah.
Because of Dickon's presence in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so loaded, man.
So loaded.
It's crazy. Yeah. Dickon's a very interesting character to me because of the way he is. So, like, in Victorian children's literature, boys are made to be adventurers. They are made to be, I think, pretty coddled, and they're made to be adventurers. So I think of, like, Peter Pan and how it's like Wendy's the one who is supposed to be the homemaker, and Peter is supposed to be the one who's out there adventuring and flying and fighting pirates and stuff.
Okay.
And so for Dickon to be, have that gentler side and that calm, like, he works with animals and works in the garden. He has a much gentler side to him that I think kind of what you were saying is Mary needed that. She needed a gentle spirit in her life to kind of soften her a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas Colin needed the exact opposite. And he needed what the nurse said, a vixen, a vixen to put him in place, because he was a terror.
Well, they both needed what no one had given them before.
Yeah. So true.
Obviously, like, Colin has been through it, right? I mean, like, and his idea of through, it's like in his mind. So Mary has truly lost everything, but this boy has never lived. Everything is in his mind, and they're both broken in such completely different ways. So as she's encountering Dickon, and for the first time healing, like, there's a scene where instead of stomping around the castle, she's skipping through the yard.
Yeah.
And I went, what a beautiful director's choice. Because it's the lightning. You see the light, like, her soul is just letting go of things.
Yeah.
And even when Colin and Mary meet, oh, she matches him. Like, she goes toe to toe with him.
100%.
Which he absolutely needs, because everyone else just seems to run from him.
Yeah.
But then when she breaks through, she's soft with him.
Yep.
And I don't think she knew how to do that before Dickon.
Uh-uh. I don't think so either.
And so it was like this trickle down of healing.
Yeah.
Like, as she healed, she was able to give that healing mm-hmm. to Colin, and then eventually Colin gifted it to his father.
Yeah.
It's like just
gorgeous.
Magnificent.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the book, the Mary's parents are like almost non-existent, I think. Mm. Like, they're kind of, they're there and then they're not. And the movie kind of gave some interesting perspective. Like, Mary was having a flashback and kind of looking like she was missing her parents. Mm-hmm. But her memories were her mom looking in the mirror at her and kind of like kind of disgusted and like, why are you in here? Mm-hmm. And very dismissive and stuff. And then her father's basically was dying. And that's like, those are her memories that she thought of while she's missing them. And so mm-hmm. it was really interesting to me to see that after kind of having nothing from the book. I don't know. I thought it was like a nice director's choice too, yeah. to kind of be like, she truly was neglected. She had no one to be soft to her.
Yeah. And I think Colin was neglected in a whole different way.
Yeah.
Right. And yep. I think too, like, these are those things where I'm like still piecing things together.
Yeah.
But he was continually crying about what might go wrong.
Yes.
He had no life because he was trapped in the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
What if this happens to me? What if this happens to me? Meanwhile, he's healthy.
Yeah.
He's just refusing to live because of, and I just was like, what, the fear of what might be and how paralyzing that can be.
Yep. It's true. It's terrifying to go through the what if cycle.
Oh,
it's paralyzing. It's exactly what Colin went through, you know, mm-hmm. to be like, what if this happens, but what if this doesn't happen? And then you go into a whole spiral and it's crazy. And I kind of like this Colin character because it shows what can happen if you stay there.
Yeah. Well, and I think his dad is so trapped in his own grief. He yeah. didn't even know how to parent the child out of that.
Yes.
And parenting, I'm sure, was very different during this time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the dad was trapped in his own grief and couldn't offer healing to his son because he hadn't gone there. Mm-hmm. Couldn't offer hope and courage because he had none.
Yeah.
And so it just, my brain is still piecing this together.
We haven't really like looked at our notes much no. because we're just like, it's just so rich. And even, yeah, the dad situation, Mr. Craven situation is crazy to me because he is, I think, still dealing with the trauma of growing up as a sick kid. And he was scared that his son would be a sick kid. Mm-hmm. So he kind of did to his son what was done to him almost, but like worse, mm-hmm. and just hid him away and couldn't deal with the grief, couldn't mm-hmm. deal with the trauma of losing his wife, and like lost out on a relationship with the son and kind of screwed up his son for a little bit until they got to the garden.
Yeah. I did think a piece of Mary's journey that I thought was really interesting, and I'd love if you have any perspective on it. She's been walking around that house, full Mary, just
yeah,
saying whatever she thinks to whoever, just going where she's not supposed to go, just sassing back, like looking at, I already forgot her name again, Mrs.
Medlock.
Medlock. She's like, I'm not a liar. You are.
Yeah.
I mean, like the
sash.
Oh my word. Sash. But as soon as she meets Mr. Craven, silence.
Hmm.
She does not sass him. She's honest with him, but she's respectful of him.
Yeah.
And it's like the first time she wasn't a jerk to an adult.
That's interesting. I didn't catch that.
She kind of stepped back and was quiet.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're too thin. She's like, I'm trying to fix it. Yeah. Or whatever she said.
I've gotten a little bit fatter.
There it is. But like, she didn't get defensive. Yeah. She wasn't angry. She just responded. Like, she was still honest, but I was like, whoa.
It's interesting because that would be pretty Victorian of the director to leave to have that kind of dynamic between the father and a child, basically, because they were the, you know, the head of the house, and they were, their main mission was to make their family look good, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to me that, like, I always have thought of fathers as providers, and doing all this Victorian studying, it seems like they're more like showy, I guess, and not like, they have to provide, they have to work, and that's part of their thing, but it's also to make everybody look good. And so a respectable father has every child in line, and no one sasses them back.
Interesting.
And so that's an interesting perspective.
Because she walked away from the conversation because he starts crying.
Yeah.
And he's like, you need to leave.
Which is also interesting because emotion is not okay.
No. I know. I was like, that's an interesting response. But she leaves and runs into Mrs. Medlock.
Yeah.
And immediately her sass is back. Huh. Immediately she's like, bah, 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 whatever she was saying.
Yeah.
And I was like, there was something about the figure of Mr. Craven that she responded differently to. And I just thought it was really interesting.
That's
a really cool perspective with the other literature you've been reading.
Later in the movie, after Mary has kind of gone through her transformation through the garden, and she's softer.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of takes on this, they call it the angel in the house, which is just like this soft and kind and nurturing woman of the house of the time, of the Victorian time, you know. And she kind of takes on this softer nurturing role with Colin, and she says to him, like, I wrote it down, sometimes it's all right to cry, Colin, because he's like starting, he's kind of like stops himself, and she's like, it's okay to do that sometimes. And she brings on this nurturing like role, and it like really, I was like, that's Angel in the House. She's taking on she's taking on that that role, which is fascinating to me, because at the beginning you would think this little girl ain't going nowhere. She is gonna be a brat till the day she dies.
Mm-hmm.
And her time bringing something back to life and spending time with people who are gentle makes her gentle.
I also think she had to address the fact that Colin was awful.
Yeah.
And his fits were ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it caused her, and at different points in the movie, she's like, I was just as bad.
Yeah.
And she's finally acknowledging that her behavior has not been okay. And there's healing in our honesty.
Mm.
Right?
That was like, good.
When we tell the truth, there's healing. It's true.
Yeah. There's shame, and there's shame and secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're brought, you know, to the light, it kind of takes away that shame. And so as she's bringing up her, she's healing herself. She's kind of like, oh, I'm being more self-aware and understanding what I did wrong in the past. And she's seen her, that behavior in Colin, which is an interesting reflection.
I also really like what you just said about how she was encouraging Colin, because I felt like, and this could just be like a storytelling piece, but when we heard the crying in the house, he was just crying.
Yeah.
And after he met Mary, it seems like it got worse.
Hmm.
Like, it was screaming and pounding, and it was all day. It wasn't just at night. And it, to me, I was like, almost like Mary gave him something to live for or to hope for, and he didn't know how to break out of the role he'd been assigned.
Yeah.
He felt trapped in like these labels that he'd been given as like this broken boy, the boy who's going to get a hump, the boy who's going to die.
Yeah.
And for the first time he had a choice. Like, you can stay that person or walk in new life.
Yeah.
And chase healing. But that's so hard, first of all, to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone watching is going to have something to say about it. So how do you become someone new with everyone watching? You do it behind closed walls, the walls of a garden.
Yeah. The garden itself, I'm kind of curious, do you have insight, thoughts on just the transformation?
Of course.
I just, in the book, it was just really beautiful to read it, mm-hmm. and to watch it was beautiful. I feel like they could have done a better job. The book was like, the way it explained it was just so much more beautiful. Hmm. And the process was slower.
Okay.
Which was interesting. And to kind of, Dickens said something about like the garden has been left alone for years.
Neglected.
It can't be fixed in a matter of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked the slowness, I think, of the book part of, because that's kind of how transformation is. Mm-hmm. It's not an overnight thing. It's an everyday choice. Sometimes it feels like.
Yeah.
Working on some of that myself. So
it's a lifelong process, it right?
Really, yeah, it really is.
And I thought there were a couple cool things. Like, we know she was obsessed with finding the key because she knew it existed.
Yeah.
And she set out to find it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And it was like the moment she stopped looking and was just living her life, she found it.
Yeah.
Which there's always a lesson in those kinds of things, right?
Always.
And it's just, it's overgrown. It looks dead. It's not cute. And Dickens said something like, I know it looks dead, but if you look deep, it still has a green heart.
Hmm.
And it just was this immediate, like you said a few minutes ago, that girl's going to be a brat till the day she dies. Like, yeah. He saw something in her.
Yeah.
Right. And he saw potential in the garden. He sees potential in people, in animals. And I think it's just a lesson for all of us. There's always more to someone's story.
Mm.
There's always more. And this garden, the walls, nobody knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And to me, it reminded me, it just was such a safe place. It reminded me of like going home.
Hmm.
Like, you know, when you just need to like a place just that's safe to fall apart or to be fully yourself,
yeah.
You had to go home.
Yeah.
And this garden became their home. The world couldn't see everything that was going on. They didn't have to perform. They didn't have to do anything special. They just had to faithfully show up, and transformation naturally happens.
Yeah.
Like with gardening, you don't force the fruit to grow. Uh-huh. It grows through the process of time.
Yeah.
You just have to keep tending the weeds, right? And making sure it's cared for.
Yeah.
So in this place, like Colin, for example, no longer had the stereotypes or whatever that had been placed on him.
Yeah.
It's the place where he got to practice. He got to fall down and cry about it.
Yeah.
And he got to keep getting back up. She got to be soft with people. And
yeah.
Figure out how to respond to life differently. She got to see beautiful things happen. She got to love others. Like, there were just so many things happening behind those walls.
Yeah.
And slowly, you see more and more safe people have access.
Yes.
And I think I was just going, oh, my goodness. Like you said, what was so funny? I have this phrase in here, like something about transformation. Because not everyone needs access to you going through the transformation.
Hmm.
The fruit will be evident.
Yeah.
Like, they'll see the flowers bloom in your life. They'll yeah. see the healing, the different choices you make. They're going to see your joy return. They're going to see you laugh fully. They're going to see you. I can't even think of examples right now, just healing things.
Yeah, for sure.
People are going to see it, but they don't need to see behind the garden all the time. Not everyone gets full access.
Yeah.
That was a really long ramble.
That was fabulous. It's, I feel like this has just been a therapy session.
I know.
I feel inspired.
Oh my word. There was a moment where I went full circle. I mean, there were a couple full circles. Colin is upset about something, about yeah. how his mom would be so disappointed in him. And something along those lines. And Mary responded, she would have loved you even if you did have a lump.
Yeah.
And I went, Mary, who has openly said her mom didn't love her because she's plain, for her to recognize her That's value so sweet. Isn't in her appearance.
Yeah.
And like, she's loved because she is.
Yeah.
Not because of what she does or
Yeah.
Her status in someone else's eyes.
Yeah.
For her to offer that. Oh, my little heart was exploding.
That's
unconditional love.
It's very sweet. I loved when Mary said that. And I don't know why I didn't connect it to like her own mom.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I don't know, man, it's just good. Man,
it's good.
You got some good insights.
I have 4 pages of notes. I could not stop writing.
Literally, I kept looking over. I have like 1 page of notes and I was like, dang, Laura, you're like writing a novel.
Every time I looked over, you were just smiling and like enjoying it. And I'm like.
Well, it's because I was like, I was watching it for, you know, the three things.
For sure.
Healing, transformation, and like gender roles and stuff.
When you had just read it. And so I think it's all a lot fresher for yes, you.
Yes, it is.
And I'm like, I haven't watched this since I was 12.
Yeah. I listened to the book twice, I think, because it was just like.
That's amazing.
It was just, it's beautiful.
I do remember when you were reading it, you would be like, oh my gosh, can we talk about this? And I'm like, sure. And now I'm like, can we talk about
this? Can we talk about this?
I'm on the same plane now. Yeah. There was a moment in the movie where I nearly, like, I was verklempt.
Great word.
Thank you. Vocab, 2 points. Colin is standing up and the dad is there. And they're like, they end up hugging. And I'm just like, the healing the father must have experienced.
Yeah.
This is a physical place he has refused to go. And his refusal to go there has stunted his healing.
Yep.
And I just went, we have to go back to where we were broken if we really want to heal.
Oh.
And I went, oh, like how many times has that been true?
Yeah.
You have to fully face it.
Yep. It's true.
And I just went, what is this place going to become for him now?
Hmm. Yeah. I loved that before he like went back home,
mm-hmm.
he dreamt about in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember this in the book. I could have missed it. But in the movie, he dreamt about the garden.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably one of the first times he's dreamt about the garden in a long time because he woke up and was like, she was in the garden. Like he was like baffled and that he saw his wife in the garden and stuff. And it was almost like it was like preparing him to go back.
Okay.
And when he did go back to see his son there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I wrote down, I was like, this might have been their first time meeting almost. Like they knew of each other.
The father and son?
Almost. Yeah. They knew of each other. They knew what the other looked like, but dad could never talk to his son.
Mm-hmm.
He would only go look at his son when his son was asleep. He could not face him. Which I think I thought he had some shame. Because absolutely. Of what he did to
parent his, guilt big time.
Oh yeah, for sure. And even just the heartbreak of his mm-hmm. not having his wife, you know. But then after he has the dream, his heart is like ready to go back to the garden. And when he goes, finally he sees his son there healthy and whole, and he's like, oh, okay, this is a place of redemption. It's mm-hmm. not a place of grief anymore. And I like it felt like there's story kind of started over.
Yeah. To walk into the garden as he once knew it, like beautiful and thriving.
Yeah.
And his son is, it seems like he was, his son was like almost, there was like an element of forgiveness there.
Yeah.
Like
they embraced, yeah. You know, they like, they gave each other hugs. And
I like that. The fresh start. So much healing. So, like,
yeah. That was a whole element that I'm really glad this is why I love adaptations because mm-hmm. I mean, you gotta be careful because sometimes most of the time the book is always better than the movie.
Truth.
But in this case, specifically with the 1987 version, the way the director and the writer added to the story is beautiful. The visual reconciliation and like mm-hmm. seeing it in front of me was like, oh wow, this is just, it's a whole other level, you know. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Gorgina. It's interesting, in a conversation I was having with my professor about this project mm-hmm. that I wanted to do, and kind of looking at this the difference in the book versus this movie, she was kind of talking about the differences in the times of when the book was written and when the movie was filmed, and then kind of our perspective now. And it's an interesting time zone uh-huh. conundrum, I guess you could say.
When was it written?
It was written in 1909, but published in 1911.
Oof.
Yeah. And then the movie was made in the 80s.
So we're talking from publication to being made almost 80 years.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, oh now. My gosh. Okay.
80s to now, what would that be, like mathematician? 40 years.
loosely, 40. Loosely.
So, a lot has changed.
What would have been, like, thinking of, like, roles of, like, kids and adults, because I think that's, like, a huge element.
It is.
What would have been expected in, like, have you learned anything from your class about that kind of a thing? Because I don't know a lot about that time period of when it was written.
Yeah. It's interesting because the roles of boys and girls were very different. Mm-hmm. And we kind of talked on that, like,
with
earlier.
Peter Pan, and then you mentioned Mr. Craven.
Boys were kind of like, I don't know. I my perspective of what I've learned throughout this the past few months is boys were kind of made to be, I don't know, they had a carefree childhood. They were able to have carefree childhood and then move up into working. Girls kind of were, from the start, made to be homemakers.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to look at Mary and Colin, and kind of like, Colin was not being trained to be a worker at all. Mm-mm. He was being trained to die.
Yeah.
Essentially. Mary kind of did not fit any of the, like, standard Victorian, like, girl standards.
Okay.
She was a brat. She was rude. She was unruly, you know, and she didn't really stay in her place. And so she wasn't able to, like, she didn't fit any of those standards until she transformed and became gentle.
And was in and British society.
Yes, exactly. Colin also kind of became that. They kind of, at the end of this movie, which was really interesting, they Colin and Mary are together.
Yeah, they get engaged.
They get engaged and they kiss in the garden.
Scandalous.
Scandal. Which, that I didn't like for some reason. They killed off Dickon.
Yeah.
Dickon died in the war. We were like, which one? He died in the war. And then Mary and Colin ended up together while Ben Weatherstaff staff watched them kiss.
Yeah.
It was just very odd. But they really did. The 80s version met those standards of, like, what could have, what should.
How the story should
in
end.
In quotes. How it should have ended.
Happily ever after.
Happily ever after. He is, you know, he went off to the army and was in the army. A man.
He's strong, strapping, responsible.
And she also looked like she went to the army, but as, like, a nurse. And so she's a caretaker. She's a nurturer, you know. So it's interesting how the 80s was so, the 80s version of this story fit kind of the Victorian ideals.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think too, because I think in, you know, 87, that would be, you'd want your Disney ending.
Yeah.
The prince and princess end up together.
Yeah.
Right. So that kind of story.
I think that's always going to be in our society.
Yeah. I would agree with you.
It's always going to be a part, you know, the happily ever after is always going to be something we crave.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a single woman now, I'm like, I want my happily ever after. But I'm like, wait, why can't my happily ever after be now? As
life,
a single
life
woman.
Life is good now.
Life is good now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know,
but that's
now,
a very 2024 response.
It is a very,
is that like feminine, like empowerment, like being able to say, no, I don't need a man to make life complete. I don't need my happily ever after to look like Prince Charming.
Yeah.
That's a much more modern.
Very much so.
So like you can see, we see movies now that end that way with girls like,
yeah,
no, I have my girls and I have my career and I have my future. I'm good. And so you see, I mean, there's still like a big market for love stories. Hello, Hallmark.
I'm subscribed. Don't worry.
But there is like that female independence arc that's very strong right now. I think in the 80s, like I'm thinking of childhood in the 80s, like girls, like we were fully allowed to play.
Yeah.
Like allowed to get messy, to run outside. Like there was no problem with childhood. But I do feel like the expectation, like in my schooling, was that if boys goofed off, it was more okay than if girls did.
Yeah.
Like girls were still expected to be a little bit gentler and quieter.
Proper.
Mm-hmm.
Prim and proper.
Yeah. And cross I don't your legs. Know. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how much of that like is my like family upbringing. Mm.
I think it's a universal thing, honestly. Yeah. I don't see it as much now.
No.
You know, we were encouraged to play and there's definitely a big shift of childhood because at one point childhood didn't exist. It was not an idea or at all. It was kids were there to be made into mini adults.
Mm-hmm.
They were just mini adults. They weren't allowed to play. They weren't allowed to explore. And so there was a shift, which is thank the good Lord, because childhood is supposed to be fun and carefree and play and imagination and finding secret gardens, all of that.
Yeah.
And so we see that still, which is so good.
And I think too, like, yeah, I'm going like, I'm still stuck on this kids thing. Like how is like kids growing up, like the expectations? Because I think in education now, we have a lot more girls that don't fall into that proper role.
Yeah.
A lot of girls that have learned to speak their mind, to say their things, to, they aren't afraid to push back.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, it's not as always as well received as when a boy does it. It's almost like it's more offensive to certain people when a girl has an opinion or is poorly behaved.
Yes.
And then we have a lot more boys. It is ridiculous because people are people and we're all in process.
Yep.
But there's also like an, I've seen a lot more parents holding sons accountable.
Yeah.
There's less of the boys will be boys.
Mm-hmm.
Like just broad acceptance. I had a mom in one year I was teaching. She said, I don't believe boys will be boys. I believe my boys will become men.
Yeah.
And I want to raise them to be good ones.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm having the hard conversations now. And I just went, well, that's a, should not be a wild concept, but it was.
Yeah.
And just because so many parents, if their boys get in a fist fight on the playground, they're like, they're boys. What do you expect? I'm like, I don't expect, you know, bloody noses over kickball. Like, it's like things like that. So I do appreciate that there are people holding boys. Like, I want them to still be children, but accountability for both.
Yes. Thinking of parenting back in the Victorian era and what was it like? Were we going, boys will be boys? Because I could see that with the literature I've read and the ideals we've discussed in my classes, it kind of seems like, yeah, boys will be boys. And then we have girls, you need to be fitting in a box. I'm curious what it would have been like.
Yeah, my family, like my mom and her generation definitely grew up with a, you're seen and not heard.
Yes.
And if, as long as we don't hear it, we don't care.
Hmm.
And they ran ruckus all over town.
Yeah.
But their parents just pretended they didn't know. Because that would, if you knew and acknowledged it, what does that do to the appearance?
Yeah. It's interesting.
What I've like learned here is that every family is broken.
Yeah.
And unless you're all willing to like actually do the work, you're going to stay broken and you're going to pass that down from generation to generation.
Yeah.
Like get in the garden. Dig it up.
Yeah.
Let something new grow.
Yeah.
and help each other heal. Help each other when you fall down.
Yeah.
Like, just deal with it and get better.
It's beautiful. I love
that. That's what The Secret Garden is all about. Deal with it and get better.
Deal with it. Get better.
And on that note, I'm just kidding.
And
I'm sure you can say that much more articulately.
No, I can't.
Articulately.
Whatever. Yeah, you said it right.
Okay.
Not with my brain fog. I can't say it more articulately, but I didn't even say that right. What I loved about this story in general is the transformation mm-hmm. and the healing that comes through time. Mm-hmm. Even the nature aspect of it is beautiful. You know, we've talked about my friend Micah, who passed away a few mm-hmm. years ago. Her family made a garden,
yep.
a memorial garden, and setting that up was healing for them.
Yeah.
And like, so even I don't want to sound like hippy dippy, but I feel like nature does have some, you know, like tending to something, taking mm-hmm. care of something. Like Mary took care of Colin.
Yeah.
And Dickon took care of Colin and Mary. Yeah. And they all took care of the garden together. It brings out beautiful transformation. And it honestly was very a hope-filled story.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was like, okay, if Mary Lennox can turn delightful and Colin Craven can be a man, I'm going to be okay.
Yep.
And it's beautiful. So highly recommend.
So good.
Highly recommend reading the story. I think you should.
I definitely need to get a copy.
Yeah. Highly recommend it.
Should we score it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Storyline. How many Julies?
Oh, 5.
5 out of 5 Julies. Honestly, like, yeah. Rewatch?
5.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Oh, I would rewatch this tomorrow. I'm not even joking.
I would too, honestly. Mainly because I'm just in a Secret Garden headspace, but I don't know if I would. I don't really like the accent changes and the moaning and groaning.
Okay.
I know. Family friendly.
5. I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, for sure. Music.
I don't remember any, so I'm going to give it a 1.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 3 because I didn't like all the music. I remember the music and I don't really like it. Location?
I'm sorry. Did we say this was the Downton Abbey Castle?
5 out of 5. Julie Andrews, please. Thank you. Costumes?
I'm going to give it a 3.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
And
I really hated her dresses.
Really?
I did.
I kind of liked them and I liked her little hats.
I hated her hat.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed her hat. See? I don't know the overall.
Overall, real good.
Real good.
Real good.
Watch it. Read the book. Read the book and then watch the movie. Let's suggest.
Go, like, invite me to coffee so we can talk about this. Yes, because please. I am not done processing.
We're going to be processing this a lot, I can tell. Do you remember when...
I'm like, I just need to like step into the garden for a minute.
Can I just step into this garden?
I found the key. My brain is going to be on this for quite a while.
I love that. Thanks for listening.
And hopefully we'll be back with a Christmas episode soon.
I'm hoping so. I have it. We have a couple locked and loaded, a couple episodes locked and loaded for you.
Closing advice.
Okay.
My advice.
Yeah.
If you hear screaming down the hallway,
don't
chase it. Call 911. Call 911.
Call 911. If you find a key to a secret garden, go in it.
Absolutely. If you meet a young man who can't walk and cries all the time, don't give up on him. He just might be the love of your life.
Oh my gosh. And that's where we end it. Thanks for listening. Bye.